rebound, Myers. He'll try a three. Left that one short. One more ball out to Myers. At the horn, it will not go either, and that will do it. The Razorbacks defeat the Gamecocks. Your final score is 69-64.
The run in St. Louis comes to an end. Arkansas, too much for Carolina. They make it 39 in a row when they're winning at halftime. You got good guards. You make free throws. You're going to win a bunch of games where you're in the lead, and that's the recipe for Arkansas. They look like a team that is poised to make a run in the SEC tournament to start the second half last night, pulling away, and then Carolina gets right back in that thing. And I feel like I'm a broken record where I say some of these losses are really representative of the season, but last night I think fits right in there, man. They gutted it out, couldn't count them out. You'd look around. I was looking around in the second half, and I think a lot of you might have gone to bed. It was late, and it didn't look good. And then there Carolina was, right back in the ballgame with a chance to win that thing, but ultimately not quite enough, Bill.
You were looking around. What, did you guys have a watch party and not tell me about it? You were looking around, and all of a sudden the crowd thinned out, and you were like, a lot of you went to bed?
In my living room by myself, looking around like, yeah, I can see a lot of people going to bed right now. I get it. I get it. Looking around on Twitter, maybe.
Okay, gotcha.
Not a lot of social media chat because it was late and you feel like maybe some people gave up, and then they come right back, man. They're right back in it. And what a great day of SEC tournament basketball yesterday. Game number one, 1-point margin. Colin Sexton wins at the buzzer. Alabama has to have that win, and they get it against Texas A&M. Huge. Game number two, Michael Porter Jr. makes basically his debut of the season. And really interesting. I mean, shoots it a bunch, has a chance to help Missouri beat Georgia, but Georgia pulls the upset. Game number three, looks like Mississippi State absolutely going to blow out LSU. Here comes LSU right back. That's a 3-point margin. So it was 1 point away from being a 1, 2, 3, and 4-point margin yesterday at St. Louis. The Gamecocks losing by 5 there. I thought it was going to be by 2 on a couple of those threes from Wes Myers in the final seconds.
Yeah, it was a game. You're right. You go back, and South Carolina just could not get over the hump. Several opportunities. Couldn't really get the stop they needed. That was, you know, I think last night, you say it was kind of a microcosm of the season. I would say that's pretty fair because good guard play won out. I mean, when Arkansas needed a big shot from their guards, Jalen Barford, down the stretch, just every time.
It was a ridiculous, like, step back. It was from, like, 27 feet or something with 3 minutes to go at the end of the shot clock. Yeah. I thought that one really was a backbreaker, but then Carolina found a way to scratch back in it after that.
Yeah, he hit several big shots coming down the stretch, but there they are, down two with a minute to go, with about a minute to go, and they forced the missed shot, and then Gafford, I believe it was, comes in and grabs the rebound, and Silva commits the foul. And Gafford's, I think, the kid. I was thinking about it when it happened.
The dunks
that put up. And just because the one thing, Silva puts up 15 and 11 last night, 15 points, 11 rebounds. But I didn't feel like it was a good 15 and 11. Like he was bothered constantly by the length and the athleticism of Arkansas last night, and that ended up making the difference. And it was kind of a game. I think as it was coming, really, as a lot of things happened in that game, there was a moment early on in the game that the announcers, I think it was Sunvold again, wasn't Sunvold, and they said, it feels like this is going to be a runaway Arkansas win. What does South Carolina have to do to keep it? And that's exactly how I felt. That South
Tom
Carolina
Hart brought it up because at the beginning, it looked like Arkansas had all the answers.
Yeah.
And Carolina started hitting threes there in the second half, and that got them right back in it and made this thing a ball game. They didn't hit enough threes like they did in game number one, where they made 12 last night. They make 8 out of 25, and I think that's ultimately, I mean, we can overanalyze this thing as much as we want to. Carolina's defensive effort, I thought, was good enough. The pace was what they had to have last night. Arkansas wanted to play this game in the 80s. The Gamecocks got it in the 60s. If they would have made a few more threes, like, for instance, Wes Myers was 0 for 6 from 3.
Yeah.
It's tough to win when you got a guy going 1 for 10 overall from the floor, 0 for 6 from 3. And your other guy, Frank Booker, he was 3 for 8, which is pretty good, but not good enough to beat a good team in Arkansas. And I think they really are a good team. They mentioned it several times last night, also on that SEC Network broadcast, how Arkansas gave North Carolina all they could handle in the second round last year in the NCAA tournament. Of course, North Carolina goes on to win the national championship. I'm not saying Arkansas is going to win a national championship, but I think they're a solid team. And I would not rule them out for beating Florida. I would be surprised none if they beat Florida today. I would also not be surprised if Florida wins by 15. It's just right, that kind right. of year in the SEC.
No, it was very entertaining. Got a chance to watch a lot of basketball yesterday, and I'm trying to think of the Big 12 game because I was flipping back and forth and happened to flip over. I think it was TCU and Kansas State, I believe, yep. where TCU hit a three-pointer at the buzzer. It was right. a really back-and-forth play, and he gets it off just in time, I believe, and they go to overtime. And then flipping around some of the ACC games yesterday, those were more blowouts, but very entertaining day across college basketball. Kind of exciting. That goes back to the thing we've discussed a little bit here is just watching the conference tournaments, and obviously the South kind of flavor to it that you had last night and watching the nightcap. But now you move on without South Carolina, and it's still going to be, in my opinion, an entertaining day. I was telling you in our little pre-production meeting, you were kind of laughing at me, but I got to sit down and kind of analyze the schedule for today and figure out what games are taking place and gear up for kind of an evening to hang out, maybe do a little grilling and watch a little basketball tonight, because this is when it's kind of a fun, really fun, entertaining part of basketball season.
No doubt about that. We've got the crossover continuing, though. Spring football still in full effect. And the big football news yesterday from a Gamecock standpoint is that ticket prices are going to increase for the first time in 5 years. $50 more for the 2018 season, an average of basically $7 a ticket, I think, when you're talking about season tickets. We'll get into that and what else you might not like to pay for when things get increased. I know there's a long list we could get to here on a Friday show, and sometimes that's what Friday shows are good for. Get up, air your grievances out there.
Mine was very easy this morning. I have to go pay it this afternoon. So
yeah, that was interesting. You'd pop right in your head with something that we all have to pay. But to me, it's when these things increase that really rankle us.
That's the good news. Mine went down. Okay. I'll say what it was, but I'm not paying as much this time. But yeah, there's things, and I've got one that I'll go drop off later today.
There you go, because you're still that guy who likes to go and make the payments in person. They're drop them off.
Well, it's
just amazing.
It's a buddy of mine, and it's a reason to go see
him. Jen, do you pay any bills in person? I don't even pay bills via the mail anymore.
No.
It's all computer, right?
Exactly.
The only reason I'm going to pay this one in person is because it's a good buddy of mine. I don't want to spoil what we're going to. We're teasing it. I'm teasing it, I guess. But it's a good buddy of mine who I'll go see and hang out.
But this
is
not the only bill you pay in person, right? He's going through his mental Rolodex. That means no. That means you got more.
No, I'm thinking of my bills. I'm thinking of my... No, I think this is... Normally, I wouldn't pay this one in person, but like I said, it's a different circumstance. But no, I think this is it.
Okay.
Electric. You see me pay my electric right here on the iPad most mornings.
But it's not set up. So I just let it all automate and you figure it out that way. You're not that guy. It's interesting to me. That's all. I think a lot of people are like that. A lot of people, is it a trust thing? Is it the man will take the money away from you if you just
automated?
Set it up? Yeah.
I don't know. I've just never. There's some that I have like that, I guess. There's some. I don't know. It depends on what the bill is and the fluctuation and how much it's going to be.
Okay. So we're talking about that because of an increase in Gamecock ticket prices. You got Carolina baseball this weekend. Princeton series adjusted slightly because of the weather. There will now be a doubleheader on Saturday. No Sunday game because of the weather. Gamecock basketball looks like the season might end at 17-16. Last night, 5-point loss to Arkansas. Carolina battling back to get in the game, have a chance. Just not quite good enough. You look at the box score, you try to get a story from this one. To me, it's sitting right there in the turnover column. 19 turnovers for the Gamecocks. Not a surprise. They had 18 turnovers the first time they played Arkansas. Just not good enough to win. The rebounding margin, maybe you could argue that balances out the turnovers. Carolina plus 13 from a rebounding standpoint, 42-29. You got to have something like that. Three-point shooting about the same for the teams. Neither team shooting well from three, right around 30%. Carolina made four more threes than Arkansas did. But the guard disparity was the reason, Bill, that we said it's a tough matchup for Carolina going in. You got Jalen Barford, Daryl Macon, really solid guards. Anton Beard, really good guard as well. He didn't even score from the floor, but those guys got in double figures in Barford and Macon, and Carolina didn't get enough from other people. Mike Kotsar, Chris Silva leading the way with 15 points each. Silva also had 11 rebounds. Frank Booker scores 11 points. He hit three threes. Outside of that, nobody else in double figures in that 69-64 loss.
Yeah, the defining stat of this game, Frank Martin talked about in his post game. South Carolina shoots 16 free throws. Arkansas shoots 26. South Carolina makes 10 free throws. Arkansas makes 23. So you've got a 13-point difference in free throws, but it really stands out when you break it down by position. And Frank Martin mentioned this postgame that the guards were not aggressive enough. Justin Manaya, Hassani Gravett, Frank Booker, and Wes Myers, your four main guards, shoot a combined three free throws. On the flip side of that, Daryl Make and Anton Beard and Jamar and Barford shoot a combined 19 free throws.
But that's not surprising to me, and that's not a product of officiating to me
either. No, not official, but we talked about guard play.
Right.
And the difference in guard play, and that's why you and I yesterday both agreed we thought this was a difficult matchup for South Carolina because of the disparity in guards.
Which is the exact opposite of last season. And
right.
One of the main reasons Carolina was able to make the run all the way to the Final Four, even though they were underdogs in all of their games, the length at guard, and then you got a guy like Sendarius Thornwell who can get to the free throw line so consistently. It's why one of the main reasons he won SEC Player of the Year last year. Frank, obviously not pleased with the officiating. I don't know if I've ever seen a coach. It's very rare you see a coach get a technical while he's sitting down on the bench. He did that from the official across the court as well. There was some gesticulating involved there, and apparently he had already been warned. But you don't see Frank Martin get a lot of technical fouls. You especially don't see a coach get teed up when he's sitting down on the bench. But apparently that had reached its limit, and that was, what, late first half, I believe, that went down. Didn't really have a huge momentum shift one way or the other in the ball game. It was interesting. It was part of the situation and part of that disparity that you talked about. You're right. When a team shoots 10 more free throws than you and makes 13 more, that's difficult to overcome unless you're just having a really good night shooting the basketball. And Carolina did not last night.
No, but I mean, you're right. That's, to me, the disparity there. What you get is guards that can get to the rim, that attack. And I think that's going to be in the offseason where South Carolina has to address their biggest need. I don't know if Rakim Felder necessarily fixes that. I think Felder's a better point guard and can take care of the ball better, and you feel more comfortable. Last night, 19 turnovers, 10 of which were just flat-out steals by Arkansas, but Rakim Felder certainly fixes some of that. But in terms of, he's not the kind of point guard who I think is the lightning quick, get to the rim, draw contact, foul kind of guy. We'll see if Jermaine Cousinard can do that, if Justin Manaya can get stronger, if David Beatty is around the program. I think that's the guy. Last night you saw him play a few more minutes than he'd been playing due to foul trouble.
He played six.
Yeah, well, again, that was a few more minutes than he had been playing.
It's right.
But you know, at the end of the day, it'll be interesting to see what the dynamics of the guard rotation will be next year. Obviously, if Brian Bowen is eligible and can play, you could see a massive upgrade at the guard position. And he may not be on the roster in terms of being able to play next year, but what the status of Jaleek Felton will be, is it's been reported that he and South Carolina have some mutual interest in what direction that could go. Obviously, won't be eligible, have to sit out due to transferring, but something worth keeping an eye on.
Felton played a great collegiate his last year of high school basketball, originally from Mullins, went to North Carolina this year, got suspended indefinitely from the team a few weeks ago, and then announced he was leaving the program just a few days ago. So that's where that situation is. North Carolina, by the way, moving on, taking on Duke tonight in the ACC tourney. They're in the semifinal rounds. They're a day ahead of where the SEC tournament is. Clemson also moving on to the ACC semifinals. They won 90-82 yesterday against Boston College. They'll take on Virginia. Virginia doing what Virginia does and keeping Louisville under 60 points. They won 75-58 yesterday. What did you think of the Alabama-Texas A&M game where Colin Sexton saves the season is kind of the narrative? I was shocked by your boy Joe Lunardi and how ESPN did the numbers. So they said it was a 44% chance that Alabama would make the NCAA tournament before the game yesterday against Texas A&M, and after winning the game, it was like a 97% chance they're going to win it. I mean, one shot was basically worth 50% increase in making the tournament. That to me is crazy. And just the way that he did it, he takes off from the free throw line, and it's not actually a finger roll. It's almost like a scoop from 10 feet out.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But Sexton had the reputation of being a really good freshman, and that will only go to add to that for sure, doing it when your team needs it the most in that situation after I think it was him on defense kind of slid under a pick and allowed – who was it? Starks that stick the three for Texas A&M and to take the lead there in the final seconds. Then he's able to go. Sexton's able to go the length of the court and beat Texas A&M.
Yeah, they slip in. Lenardi updating the bracketology late last night. Alabama slides in. They'd play a play-in game against Oklahoma. That'd be fun to watch because you'd have Colin Sexton going against Trey Young. That'd be worth it. And then the other storyline of last night was Middle Tennessee being knocked off in the Conference USA tournament. Did you see what Conference USA is doing for their tournament?
I did not. Oh, yeah. Is that the one that they have two separate courts in the same venue?
It's at Dallas. They're doing it at Jerry World. And so they've got two courts on the football.
And they're
playing at the
same time. It
kind of
looks like an AU tournament.
Yeah. Hey, I actually think I saw some kind of – it was on Twitter last night, and I saw some kind of feedback on that, and a lot of people were kind of down on it. Look, man, it's Conference USA.
Right.
Do something to stand out. And I actually thought it was a pretty good idea, but to go back real quick, Middle Tennessee loses last night. That's pretty much a one-bid league, and now it looks like Middle Tennessee is going to have to get an automatic bid, or else, if you're thinking about South Carolina, the NIT – Middle Tennessee is automatically in the NIT because they won their regular season championship.
Right, you're saying an at-large bid, Middle Tennessee would have to knock another big major conference team out on the bubble, and that's unlikely to happen. We'll be interesting to see.
Well, Lenardi, man, Lenardi, you know, he's on this thing. He's got Middle Tennessee in the play-in game against Louisville right now.
Yeah, I would much prefer a team like that gets the nod over a major conference team that has many more losses on its resume because they get so many more chances. Middle Tennessee just doesn't get those chances built into its schedule.
First four out right now, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame, Arizona State, and Syracuse. Mm.
Arizona State, man, how far did they drop? Bobby Hurley and company were ranked in the top five, I think, at one point before the Pac-12 season really got going and proved that they just didn't have what it took. Oklahoma State would love to see Mike Boynton and company get in, especially over a team like Oklahoma.
Who they beat two out of three times.
Right. Gamecock football ticket prices increasing, $50 per season ticket, so $7 per game, I believe, is what it works out to. The USC folks putting that out yesterday. That leads us to ask this morning, what do you like to pay the least? I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on this, Bill. We got four options via the Frank's Discount Tire poll question at Tim Hill 107.5. You got ticket increases leading the way because of yesterday's news. You have taxes this time of year, pretty appropriate. You have tips or bills. You mentioned you already had one in mind that came to mind immediately. All of those things just immediately put me in a mood of, no, I don't like to pay any of those, none. But you have one that sticks out?
Well, probably because I got to pay it today.
Is that the only reason that makes sense?
Is the old car insurance.
Okay.
The old car insurance. I guess you don't, you know, it's something, but I'll go see my buddy.
So we would file that under bills, by the way.
Is that what you would go with? Mm-hmm. All right. I'll vote bills. Car insurance. Although I feel like that one's different because I pay it, once every four months, whatever, instead of the typical monthly for the electric, monthly for the water, monthly for the mortgage, all that good stuff. So
you are paying it monthly. You might just write the check.
Write the check every 3 months. Yeah. It's So I'll go do that. I'll go pay my good buddy, my insurance agent, Benjamin Ryan. I'll get to hang out with him. He's a big Clemson fan. We'll talk sports. We'll talk NCAA tournament. So I'll go pay that in person. That goes back to why I go pay that in person, because I get to hang out with him. I've known him since we were in elementary school. But yeah, that would be the one. The tickets thing, man, don't mind it at all yesterday. $50, $7 basically per game. I get it. If you're buying five or six tickets, yeah, I understand. Now you're talking about a bit of an increase. But
For instance, Jimmy D hit me up and said it's going to be even more difficult to take a family of four to a game now.
You know, but I think what you're weighing here is the cost of trying to keep up with the Joneses I think it's trying to keep up with the rest of the league. South Carolina's ticket prices, I believe, last year were ninth in the league in terms of average. So with that in mind, I don't feel like South Carolina is gouging their fans. That's kind of the price of business. Now, I also saw some other people come back on Twitter. I do think if you're going to raise ticket prices, this goes back to our discussion, whether you're raising them or not, you got to make the in-game or the in-stadium experience. You're competing now with television. with the 55 and the 60-inch and the 65-inch HD television, the 4K television, whatever. That's who you're competing with. Mm-hmm. And so how do you improve the game day experience, whether it's making traffic flow better so people can get in and out, whether it's improving the concessions and offering more amenities? I know South Carolina tried to do that a little bit this year. Whether I've seen some complaints about the concourses and being able to maneuver around the stadium a little bit more. I have zero problem with the ticket increase. It's just now, okay, if you're going to do that, how can you make the at-the-game experience improved?
I think also some people, if you are really upset about what comes out of your pocket from a fan standpoint, from a donor standpoint, you point to the television revenue that comes flowing in ridiculous numbers. For instance, Darren Revelle put out yesterday what CBS and Turner will pay. Actually, this was 2 days ago. What they'll pay for the NCAA tournament the next few years. $857 million is the figure this year. It goes up to $920 million in 4 years or 5 years at the end of the five-year contract. So pretty close to that $1 billion that we always talk about when we're talking about what the NCAA brings in, and then athletes not getting a piece of that or getting a small piece of that when you're talking about price of scholarship and price of attendance and all that kind of stuff. So those four options: ticket increases, taxes, tips, and bills. The taxes thing is always hilarious to me in our very patriotic country, where we feel like freedom is very important and we like to make sure that we're the best in everything. We just don't want to pay for any of it.
Right.
Don't pay a lick of it. And it's almost encouraged to cut corners and cheat as much as you can on your taxes, because that's also very American. It's an interesting dichotomy, I think, in our country. I mean, I'm right there with everyone, by the way. I don't want to pay any more money in taxes than I have to, but I also like to complain about potholes and roads and everything that the money goes to typically, but then it's the wasteful taxes. The tips on here doesn't get an early vote, I'm surprised. I think if you ever worked in any kind of restaurant, that you have a different mindset when it comes to tipping, but I've seen people who just, there's something about paying extra, a gratuity. To me, the tip thing bothers me if I go to a place for lunch. Let's say I'm picking up a sandwich, and then I'd never pay with cash. I'm not a cash guy, so uh-huh. I pay with a card. And then they turn the little computer around for you to fill out, and then there's a place for a tip. And I feel like I'm obligated then to
if
pay
it
for
just
a tip.
Says tip.
And what
you
what am I tipping for? I'm not tipping for any kind of service. You're just handing me the sandwich that I thought was included in the price. That really bugs
hurt
me.
You
yeah.
Okay, yeah,
it makes me feel bad. I leave feeling bad if I said no tip, and I also leave feeling bad if I paid a tip and I'm like, I just got gypped off what I
paid for. So you're worried about them doing something to your food or putting something
I'm
under
not
your,
worried about that
when you've already got it.
It's the concept, because I completely agree for paying a solid 20% gratuity if someone who is relying on basically that, because restaurant servers typically don't get paid more than like a buck an hour or something ridiculous otherwise. Like, they earn their money. They provided the service. I have no problem paying for that. It's when there is no extra service provided, and yet I still feel like it's expected.
So I think that to me happens when I go to like a pick up a pizza somewhere, and you go, because I will admit,
if it gets delivered to you,
one of the weird cheap things I do. And like, well, you talk about a summertime topic. What's the cheap things you do in life? I've stopped paying for like delivery for the pizza. I just go and get the pizza. Mm-hmm. Like, you get out of the house and go get the pizza.
So you don't have to pay?
So I don't have to pay the extra, whatever the delivery charge is. Like, I don't remember the last time I had a pizza delivered to my place.
But it is interesting when you go to pick something up, and you're checking out or whatever, and it'll give you the option of, would you like to add a tip? And they're standing right there, and I'm like,
For what?
Right, exactly.
Like, I'm always the awkward social person. They're like, do people typically asking that person?
Oh, no.
Do people typically tip you for this?
They're going to say no? Have you ever gotten a no?
When you put them on the spot, always. Generally you get an awkward answer back, like, well, some do. All right, I'm not some.
I think my
feel better about that answer now. Okay, I'm good.
We had this conversation not long ago when I was up visiting my mom. And she said, now, when you go to pick up, I was picking up dinner from a little, small town restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, now, I think typically you tip them when you pick it up. And
right.
I said, well, why? I said, if I'm going in to pick it up. She said, well, your dad always did. And I said, why did he do that? And she said, oh, wait, that's because he sat out in the truck outside of the restaurant
nice.
And said,
they brought it to him.
Bring it out, you mm-hmm. know. So it's like, okay, that I could see tipping him for.
But see, those restaurants, like the typical chains, like an Outback or something, where they have that whole thing set up, but they have a server who's not getting paid necessarily to do that, to actually perform the service and
right.
bring it out. So I got no problem, but it wouldn't exactly. be like 20%. Typically, I'm like 10%. That's
yep.
about right. There you go. You earned it.
So are you the typical guy? Because I will admit, at 35 now, early on, when I'd go to Myrtle Beach or somewhere to play golf, you'd pull up, and there would be the guy there waiting to just simply take your bag out
right.
and literally turn around and put it, and you'd always feel obligated that you have to tip him a few
yeah.
dollars for
I always feel bad about that, too. Mm-hmm. I either feel like I'm getting gypped off or I'm cheap.
Were you the guy, are you like me, that you kind of look at your friend and you're like, sorry, I don't have any
right?
cash.
Right, I'm always that guy. I never have cash, ever. Or I will go out of my way and say, no, I got it.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
worry about it,
mm-hmm.
I got it. So then I feel a little less bad, but also knowing that he's just standing there now doing nothing. He wouldn't have been doing that much more, but now he's not going to get paid.
Yeah, you're saving his back.
And then there's the small talk obligation as well. Like, hey, weather's good today.
How's the course playing?
Yeah,
what's the course record?
Right.
Oh, that's always awkward.
Did you hear that, Jimmy? He said 64. We're going for 64 today. No, on all 18. Not just 9.
Bills are leading the way. And what do you like to pay least this morning on the Frank's Discount Tire poll question? Taxes not far behind. Ticket increases a distant third place and tips in fourth right now. I like Trevor's nomination. He wrote in on the Shepherd's Glass inbox. Parking/speeding tickets. I hear you on that one. There's a lot of things out there people just don't want to pay for.
James weighs in on the Shepherd's Glass Twitter inbox. He says, I'm tired of sharing my spot on the bench with someone who doesn't fit in theirs. Give us actual seats, then the ticket increases are fine. So that makes okay. sense, because I guess we're, you know, around
talking about the bleachers,
right?
The bench,
instead of just having the actual seats like you have at a basketball game.
Okay.
And that's a good point. You would eliminate some seats. But could you charge more if you gave somebody
yeah.
actual seats?
But then you go the actual reality of that is if you go to Neyland Stadium and your seat's about 8 inches wide,
yeah.
that's better, right? I don't think that's better, but he's just saying he wants his defined space.
No, he wants. I think he's what James is saying here on this is yeah, he wants a seat. He wants, instead of the bench, put in actual, like, they've got them obviously in the club levels. I know mm-hmm. they have them in the zone. They've got them in the club levels, but obviously in the lower bowl and obviously the upper deck, it's, you go up there and it's seat, you know, it's
yeah,
in the backs.
Then isn't the next thing like, oh, I need cushions on the seats.
Yeah.
Then,
but I mean, if you get
that,
all right, but again, we're talking about upgrading the in-stadium experience.
Right,
do you feel better about paying for a ticket increase? Now, again, if you do that, it's going to probably take out, I don't know, 8,000 to 10,000 seats, maybe.
Not at Neyland. Have you seen those seats? Those things are ridiculous.
You know what? I would.
I think they've added them.
Everybody sits sideways,
right?
I would be interested to see it just in the mindset of competition,
right,
or
race for attendance numbers.
Well, no. If you put where you're going to have your fans sit, if you put seats, but in the visitor section, it's just the benches.
Nice.
So that the opposing fans, when they come in, they're not as comfortable as all your fans. I mean, just, and you can, that's just a thought.
Interesting. Or in the idea of Southern hospitality, you could even go the opposite way. Or you could certainly have, like, they have the student section. You leave the bleachers for them. You call that, you know, old school camaraderie, trying to encourage
yep.
everyone being together. And then in the other seats, you have actual seats.
I mean, you have some of that. You have the obviously the zone, and again, the club, the two club levels, and then you got the Champions Club and everything where you've got the actual seats. But just if when you start talking the ticket price increase, I think that's what I'd be found. What are some of the amenities that you need to feel comfortable in order to pay the ticket increase?
David gave us a call this morning off the air and told Jen, taxes is why we left England.
Okay.
Good history lesson this morning. Good to know. We'll get into taxation versus representation as we go on this morning.
Oh,
or
man,
maybe we'll talk more about
this is not going to go well for
maybe
me.
We'll talk more about Gamecock basketball last night and review the season now in its entirety, basically, assuming the Gamecocks don't go to the NIT, which I think would be an outside shot at this point, 17-16. You really have to make a good case for the Gamecocks, for instance, to get in over LSU as a better record and finished higher in the SEC. It's just by one spot, I understand. It'll be interesting to see how this thing plays out, but 17-16 after the Final Four season. Certainly not what a lot of Gamecock fans were hoping for, what Frank Martin and the players weren't hoping for, but it is reality, and it continues a streak now. No back-to-back seasons in the NCAA tournament since that champion SEC championship year back in the late 90s and the year that followed.
If you're interested, NYC Buckets, which is about the best NIT bracketology I can find, nycbuckets.com. This was updated on March 8th at 12:30 a.m., has South Carolina in as a 4 seed taking on Temple.
Okay, and the same team they played earlier this year didn't work out well for the Gamecocks. I was interested to see that Temple ended up finishing 7th in its conference.
Didn't see that coming because Temple popped Clemson pretty good down in Charleston.
Right. They looked really good in that game against Carolina. And
I didn't follow Temple throughout the season, so I don't know if there was injuries or what occurred afterwards. But, yeah, I watched Temple early on and thought that was going to be a pretty good team.
Gamecock basketball coming up 5 points short last night. Frank Martin after the ball game pointing out the free throw attempt disparity, especially when it came to the guards, how Frank Booker, I believe, the only guard for the Gamecocks to shoot a free throw. He was 2 out of 3, and then Arkansas got to the line consistently almost with all of its guards, and that really turned out to be the difference for him, and that sums up this season. I think the frustration Frank had with his backcourt and probably directly comparing it to, I mean, what else can you do as a coach? You're coming off a season where you can argue that the backcourt goes down as the best one Carolina's ever had, even with that three-headed monster back in the day that won the SEC championship with B.J. Mackey and Larry Davis and Melvin Watson. The run that Sedarius Thornwell, P.J. Dozier, Dwayne Notice went on last year to the Final Four happened. I mean, that's reality. You can put that up favorably against anything in Gamecock basketball history, the only Final Four run they had. I think that would be an interesting debate, actually. Which three would you take? What do you think? You're looking at me like I have two heads. You don't think it's an interesting matchup? I think it would be.
Well, let's go back to next year's team real quick for South Carolina, because one thing that I've watched with South Carolina, I like the length. And so when you can have the length of Dozier and Thornwell, and next year you have the length of Bowen and Manaya in your backcourt. We saw what the length did, and when you compare, obviously, and Notice was a bigger guard. It's not like he was 5'10". I mean, he was 6'2", 6'3", I think, and was kind of a more physical big guy.
Long arms, too, that helped him, and strong.
But I guess to go back to it, you see how Frank Martin wants to play defense, and a lot of schools are like that now. But the length at the guard position truly, truly helps you. And so when you – to me, I would always side with the taller, longer group. So kind of like that's one reason I really, really like what South Carolina could have next year in terms of but if you've got a 6'7 Bowen, a 6'6 Manaya, and even though you got Felder who's 5'10", that's a pretty long, rangy group. And then if you add Jermaine Cousinard to the group, I keep calling him Jermaine, I got to make sure that's correct. Yep. But if you add him to the group, that's a 6'4 guard. All of a sudden, your dynamics of your guards completely change from Frank Booker, who's about 6'2", 6'3", or 6'3", 6'4", Wesley Meyer, 6'2", 6'3", and Hassani Gravett, who's 5'10", 6', somewhere in there, 5'11", 6'. So your backcourt grows exponentially with the length of Bowen and Manaya and how they can play defense. I still was a little amazed when they lost the Mississippi State game in Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
That Frank Martin really cited not having the length of Manaya on defense for that game because he was out, how much it impacted him. And it just tells you how much the length of Manaya was needed and used in certain situations.
Well, his defensive ability, and that's what you don't know about Brian Bowen right now, and that's what makes me raise my eyebrows when we're projecting forward. We haven't seen it on the college level, and I think that's a big deal. I think we saw that with David Beattie this year. He just could not make the transition from high-level high school basketball to high-level college basketball from that standpoint. And that kept him, I think, his minutes limited and kind of in Frank Martin's doghouse to a large degree. And that's something that some guys, clearly it was no problem for Manaya. And that's something that's not appreciated enough, I think, in the recruiting hype. You can't see that in points averages, but I think really good defensive-minded coach like Frank Martin took to that, evaluated that clearly correctly, and was able to get a bit of a steal on the recruiting trail, right, in my opinion. Now, going back to the three-on-three comparison of last year's three guards for the Gamecocks and Sedarius Thornwell and Notice and P.J. Dozier against the previous three back two decades ago now in Mackey and Watson and Larry Davis. I think you got a better shooting group in the older group,
yep,
right? And you have a better defensive group in the last one, the more recent
See,
one.
To me they're about even. So I want the longer,
mm-hmm, makes sense.
The longer group. I think that group would three on three.
I think it would be a tremendous series. I would love to be able to see.
Yeah, I do agree with you, but I would, and maybe it's the fresh mentality of watching that group, even though it's now a year removed, go into the Final Four. But no, I would take, because I'm sure a lot of people say, man, look at some of these bad games, look at these bad, you know, and point to those. But yeah, I would go with the longer.
So they're more dynamic. Last year's group, clearly the Final Four run, the ceiling is higher, right? P.J. Dozier, we don't even know what he's going to be
as
a pro.
Yes, yes.
The ceiling higher for those guys, but the consistency not nearly as good. We got to remember, an SEC championship, the first ever in the history of the University of South Carolina, was P.J. Mackey, Melvin Watson. And it wasn't like the SEC was down necessarily. It wasn't like Kentucky wasn't Kentucky or anything like that. They still won that against really good teams. So I would say the consistency advantage goes to the older group, but the ceiling and maybe the ability advantage goes to the group we saw last year. I think B.J. Mackey and Thornwell are pretty much a wash. Would you agree with that?
You know, I'm going through them.
I give the advantage.
Notice on Watson, I'd take Melvin Watson.
Uh-huh, agreed. I think you got to give... You might give Thornwell the advantage one-on-one against Mackey, right? A little bit bigger?
Yeah, see, that's where I like the defense on him and Mackey. But Mackey's defense was really underrated. I mean, we talk about him as...
So that's close to a wash. And then you got the other matchup in Dozier versus Larry Davis. Certainly from a shooting standpoint, you give the matchup to Davis.
Here's the thing about that. Talking about Larry Davis that we saw as a junior and senior.
Right.
I would love... Yeah, obviously, if P.J. Dozier goes on to be a junior and then, you know, if a senior... But... This is where, as liking basketball and trying to formulate a team, I like the length of Dozier there. I would take him over Davis, but that's a great poll question. Now, as you start to break that down, probably should have done that last year, but
no, because it was incomplete information. Maybe at the end of the season we could have done that, right?
Yeah.
But now we have more complete information, and I think we have a better appreciation for last year's group of guards at South Carolina after seeing what happened this year with a completely different cast of characters. Would be an interesting game to watch. I would love to see that 3-on-3 matchup in the hypothetical basketball world of the LeBron James in his prime versus Michael Jordan, yeah, in his prime, or Kobe versus Jordan, the whole thing. So just to be clear, you're taking Notice, Dozier, and Thornwell, and I'm taking Mackey, Watson, and Larry Davis.
We're drubbing you. We'll give you 7 points in a game to 8.
That's just ridiculous.
All right, maybe we won't do that. But no, I...
2 seed and a 3 seed. Back-to-back years. That's strong, son. Strong.
Which teams do you like better?
I'm sorry?
What teams do you like? What is the better team? Because, and again, it might be just the fact that we're still watching them, but you've got, was it Gallman and Nate Wilborn? Is, mm-hmm, that right? Am I right?
Sounds
on that?
Right.
As the post players versus Kotsar and...
Well, more athletic, there's no doubt. It's Silva and last year's bunch. And that's why I said the ceiling higher for that group, but also the consistency much lower. I mean, they were 7 seed. We were surprised they got that. But they did make the run all the way to the Final Four. They got good matchups and played really, really well, and it was a magical run. It just depends how you evaluate that.
That's why I don't agree with who was it who tweeted in and said that they went to the Final Four hand easy.
Chris,
okay. That's why I don't agree with that, because... R.A. Lay says Watson, Davis, Mackey all day long. Career is much greater. And I do kind of agree with that when you look at the totality of what they did. An NIT game, I think Davis wasn't a part of that. Larry was sitting out that year. It was Watson and it was Mackey's freshman season. And then you come back the next season and you have that 2-year run that was incredible, 15-1 and I believe 13-3. And that 13-3 year, they also went to the SEC championship game. Now, they got annihilated by Kentucky. I think it was 86-56 in the championship game in Atlanta. But they did go to the SEC championship game. And so that 2-year run really is up there, as good of a run as South Carolina has had. Obviously, South Carolina right now is in the middle of a run, a 4-year run, that you could say is up there, is as good as any run since the 70s. Because now, at least, if they don't play another game, it'll be the – the first time since Frank McGuire that they finished four straight years above 500.
That one coach did it anyway. That's the note that David Kloniger came up with. I don't know if that's a technicality where they in an overlap years, but okay. I'm guessing it's not. But yeah, and it's how you evaluate South Carolina basketball at this point, still not having gone to back-to-back NCAA tournaments since that run with the Mackey and Melvin Watson and Larry Davis 20 years ago. And this year, it's a matter of now whether the Gamecocks will get in the NIT. We've tried to find more information about that this morning. It's not going to be conclusive, I don't think, until Sunday night when the bracket comes out after the NCAA tournament gets announced, which will be what we're talking about mostly on Monday. Bill, you will not be part of the program. We're going to try to lure a legend in here maybe, or maybe it'll just be Jen celebrating Butler getting to the NCAA tournament, and I'll have to put up with that.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
Joey Logano wins. I am finding a way to call in.
Fair enough.
I won't answer.
What do you like to pay the least? We asked you the day after Gamecock football announced they were raising ticket prices. That actually finishes third this morning with 10% of 284 votes. 48% of you. Taxes winning out over bills, 36% of you. Tips was just 6% of the vote. That makes me feel good about our audience. You?
I'm in agreement. I'm going to go pay the car insurance shortly.
Thanks for listening. Early Game, 107.5 The Game.